tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Maggie Gilmore, librarian with DC Public Library. On today's DCPL Presents, we are joined by curators of the library's long-standing Chamber Music at Noon monthly concert series, Vasily Popov and Ralitsa Pacheva.
Hello.
We also have here their two sons, Vlad and Yuri.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome. Vlad plays cello, and his older brother plays violin, Yuri. We're going to hear from them a little bit later in the program. First, Vasily, tell us about Chamber Music at Noon. And this was formerly called the Brown Bag Chamber Music Series. Where did it first take place?
The first concert took place, I believe, in March 2002 in the auditorium A5. You probably remember this auditorium in the basement of the old building, which is now under construction. And I remember very well the day when we decided to start this concert in the Martin Luther King Library. It was January 17th, 2002. When Ralitsa and I took a walk in Washington, D.C. and discovered the D.C. Public Library, walked in and met their person who introduced us to, by then, head of the music division in the library, Amy Edmonds, who was a librarian and a musician herself. She was a professional viola player. And I offered Amy to start the series, community series, in the library. And she said, sure, we didn't have anything like that. We usually host some performances in the summer, but not during the year. And we chosen the date, the first Thursday of the month. And on the first Thursday in March, we held our first performance. And this is how it all began.
And it remains the first Thursday of every month.
Yes.
And so this, about 2 years ago now in 2017, we left the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library and transferred the piano over to the Goethe Institute of Washington, who share a building with us now at 1990 K Street Northwest. So we were fortunate enough to find a host for our piano, which lived in the Great Hall of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library. It's a Yamaha C series, is that right, Ralitsa?
Conservatory series, yeah.
And the piano is really kind of what makes this continuation of chamber music at Noon possible.
Well, yeah, chamber music, you really depend on having a piano unless you have a good supply of string quartets or other groups, but... As the pianist of the two of us, I must say, if I see a room that has a piano, I feel much more welcome in it. And so I think this, the fact that the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library had an auditorium that had a piano in it, really made us inspired to start that whole series. And I think the other factor was their amazing music division. I think that that's why we ended up going to the DC Public Library on that January day. And, you know, the kind of music we found in this library and the richness of this collection made us really think, wow, this stuff has to be played, you know. I mean, a library with such a wonderful music collection needs to have music sounding in it more often. So I think those two factors were really important in starting the series.
This is truly your music collection in the library is the best. I still use the music and borrow the music for my orchestras that I run at Live-In Music, and I found many interesting and new to me pieces that I performed in this series and in my concerts too, and they all came from the collection. And in fact, Moreover, there were some music pieces that I would look for and could not find in the libraries. Then in 2002, 2003, IMSLP, the famous among musicians, the catalog, online catalog, when one can find a lot of music,
was not yet
digital catalog, right? Wasn't available. They have not started that project yet. And one could just go in the DCPL and find that music over there because we have really, really great collection of pieces for different instruments.
Do you have a sense of why the DC Public Library ended up with such a solid and developed sheet music collection?
Well, you probably would know more about the actual history of that. We our impression is that it's very varied. There is a lot of music that's old, and although we nowadays think to always tend to look for new things, sometimes you find absolute gems or missing pieces in the puzzle, so to say, because music history is something where you need to know as much about the puzzle as possible. And I think those old editions, the Kindler collection that you've had, all of those things are really decisive for musicians to be able to witness, to open, to play. You should probably make a
and
whole
some,
program
at some
about,
point
about
they were
the
definitely the library was acquiring a lot of music that was published by the famous American publishers, and they were using a lot of rare music to reprint it. Just it was really probably
right.
One of the
and there were three music librarians at least in the music division, so mm-hmm. there really was a support network to put that work and time into developing that collection. And you referred to the Kindler collection, which is the Hans Kindler orchestral score collection, which we loan to area orchestras. We have mentioned it here on Full Service Radio before. And again, you can find that information at dclibrary.org/Kindler. Mm-hmm. So, Vasily, I hear you have brought your cello into the studio this afternoon.
Yes, I did.
What are you going to play for us?
Well, I would like to play for you the prelude from the first cello suite by Johann Sebastian Bach. Bach composed 6 suites for unaccompanied cello, and they all of them are very, very popular among music lovers, and of course not to mention among cellists, and not only cellists, because they are played on the different instruments too, be it violin, piano, even trombones. And the prelude from the first suite is the movement that opens the set of suites, and this is the reason why I decided to play it for you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Thank you.
The Bach Cello Suite number 1, performed by Vasily Popov. That was absolutely beautiful, and a tune I think that is recognizable to many. It's a popular piece.
It's a very popular piece of music, and this is why I decided to play this piece here.
One thing I was thinking about that really stands out and separates the Chamber Music at Noon series from other concerts and traditional concert settings is that, well, first of all, they are free, and you have this incredible professionalism that you bring to the stage. So you're hosting not only yourselves as professional musicians, but you're hosting guest artists consistently that people may not otherwise be able to discover, and let alone in the middle of the afternoon.
Although we are community series, we indeed invite our colleagues, professionals, to play the concerts. And in fact, Wade Davis, the DC and Baltimore areas cellist and teacher, he plays both traditional cello, contemporary cello, and also baroque cello. He will be coming on June 6th at 12 noon. It's the first Thursday of the month at 1990 K Street, Goethe Institute, and will play the first and the third suites by Johann Sebastian Bach for unaccompanied cello. And he will play this prelude too on Thursday. So if you would like to hear the interpretation of this suite, you are welcome to join us for the concert on June 6th. Wade Davis will be the performer. But we host a variety of music. Just recently in May, our last concert, I invited a friend of mine and absolutely wonderful guitarist who plays both contemporary and classical guitar, Eric Ulrich, and we presented a recital with him which included both classical music and jazz and rock tunes. One of our favorites, and I hope our audience favorites too, is the Jersey by the Steely Dan rock band. So we love this tune and we play it very often in our performances. Mm-hmm. And we also play some jazz standards.
And something unique about this series is that you bring program notes to the concerts in print, and also you stand and speak about the pieces that you are playing at length, and I'm always impressed with just the amount of knowledge that each of you bring.
Over the years, it became more popular, and artists, it seems like it becomes pretty much standard when the artists talk about the pieces that they play from stage. Ralitza probably would tell you more about
this. I think by now, just like a number of years ago, maybe it wasn't a tradition for an artist to come on stage and talk to their audience. I think now we could pretty much say it is a tradition now. I think the audience almost expects, really a communication with the artist, to hear their voice, but also really to be given some kind of a context for the music that will be played. Through the 15 years history of our series, or more than 15 years, we've had some people who actually have been coming to these concerts pretty much almost from the start of the series. And some of them were actually wonderful musicians and music lovers who gave us a lot of wonderful ideas. There used to be one of our longtime fans who was coming to the concerts was Mr. Zorab Modi, who was actually also a big DC Public Library fan, and he would
he was a regular at the music division.
He was absolutely a regular, and he always found those rare books to read, and he was full of information about things. And even for a while we had him do the little introduction of the program, and he would say such interesting things that he passed away, I think, probably at least 5 years ago, and we thought that has to keep going, so we started preparing those they're not lectures really, but I think we try to really balance both the entertainment value in what we say, but also give some really useful information about it, so that it's neither too academic nor just kind of, you know, the gossipy side of, you know, what Beethoven did on this summer of, you know, 1820 something. So we try to make it both interesting and informative. We've had there is a wonderful lady called Joyce Bouvier who has been coming for many, many years, and she's a wonderful singer. She doesn't do it professionally now, but we've actually performed a couple of times with her because she has a beautiful high soprano, and we've done several concerts with her in the series. And then now we had another very interesting collaboration that Vasily can tell you about with our audience member, Alan.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have one of our audience member, Alan King, who one day brought to me the book of Fantasies by Telemann that was recently discovered by German musicologists. The fantasies are for viola da gamba, and we play these fantasies in the concerts. And not only this book of fantasies by Telemann, he brought some other pieces to us that we also consider to play in the next years.
But I think, I mean, Vasily now performed all 12 of them, and it was one every month, and it was like a little cycle, you know. So mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful to have this kind of communication with one's audience, and it's almost like an exchange at this point of ideas and of, you know, just love for music. So I think talking to your audience is pretty essential.
Sure. And do you think this is something unique in a public library? Would you be able to find this concert experience elsewhere?
I think a public library is pretty much the perfect setting for this, because it really combines, you know, the image of an institution that gives you knowledge not just about music, but about many other fields. And I think music is both a very specific sort of field, but it's also really an art in a field that's really connected to other fields, to literature, to musicology, to cinema, to, you know. And so when you have a concert series in a library, you kind of bring people together that might have come to find their favorite book, and then they discover the concert series, and that's
I always
kind of
still
the purpose of it all, I think.
Mm-hmm. To all my students, I say that the music is also a language.
Mm-hmm.
It is a language, and where else, if not in the library, to talk about it, of course.
And speaking of language, you originally, Vasily, are from Russia, and
yes,
Ralitsa, you originally are from Bulgaria. When did you first start learning English?
Well, my English... first I learned it... I was learning it a little bit in Russia, but then I used it when I moved to Germany to study. I used first English, and then I began to speak more German. And then I would say that mostly I learned English here when I was in the United States. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mine was. I actually studied it from second grade in Bulgaria. So I was 8 years old when, you know, we had regularly twice a week English instruction in the school, like in the public school. And I remember very well how our teacher taught us the word through, and she said, that's a very difficult word to spell, so you better work on it. And I remember writing it about 50 times at home and never misspelled that one.
And where specifically in Bulgaria were you born and raised?
I lived in Sofia, you know, for the 15 years that I lived in Bulgaria of my life. That's where I was.
And Vasily, where in Russia were you born?
I was born in St. Petersburg in Russia, and I lived there through a big portion of my life, much longer than I live here in D.C. And then I moved to Munich for 2.5 years. I lived in Munich, and now I live here.
Where we met.
We met with Ralitsa, right?
Both studying in Munich.
In Munich.
Yeah.
And did you each have musical families? What introduced you to playing the cello and the piano, respectively?
I have to say that I have definitely musical family, although my father is not a musician, but he was a very musical person and was self-taught pianist and accordion player. And my mother is a professional pianist and piano teacher. She still has some students. She lives in St. Petersburg.
Yeah. And she has made appearances at the chamber music at noon.
Yes, she made appearances. We played concert with her. It was a number of years ago. We played all our repertoire since my childhood. I played with her. Yes, and from her, my mother's parents both were musicians. Father was a flutist. Principal flutist of the Mikhailovsky Opera Theater in St. Petersburg, and her mother was a very, very good pianist, and she taught piano and taught general music too. And from my father's family, all the parents of my father were big music lovers, and although they didn't play musical instruments, but they were attending the concerts and were always on top of what is going on in the music life in St. Petersburg.
On my side, I should probably start with my two grandmothers. One of them has a beautiful soprano voice that even in her late 80s is still there, but she never pursued it, but she sang a lot to me when I was growing up. And my other grandmother always wanted to play piano, and she never could, you know, because of the economic conditions of the time and all the wars and all of that. She's in her early 90s now, and I think she, you know, so basically when my father finally got the chance to buy a piano, he got an old German piano, and that piano was in the house when I was growing up. My father had studied violin as a child, and then he, you know, changed fields and studied to be a doctor, and he became a scientist, but he loved the violin and he loved music. So I think the combination of those things made me pay attention to this piano. I tried to play violin, wasn't going very well, but my grandmother noticed I was going to the piano instead of playing violin, and she took me to piano lessons, and that's how it all started. So
yeah. We have to mention too that both Ralitz and I have brothers. Yep. And both of our brothers are musicians of different kind, totally different fields. So Ralitz's brother is a bass guitarist. Mm-hmm. He's a scientist by his education. He works in the pharmaceutical field, but he is very dedicated bass guitarist who takes gigs, performs, and his wife is a singer. And on my side, I have a famous brother, who lives in St. Petersburg, and he is the best. He lived in St. Petersburg, now he lives in Moscow, true. He's an associate principal flutist of Bolshoi Opera Theater, and he is a famous flutist in Russia. His name is Nikolai Popov.
And also, we have hosted him at the Chamber Music Concert Series.
He appeared, we played. Yeah. It was 2 years ago, I believe, we played
the beautiful golden flute.
The beautiful
golden Yeah, and the beautiful, beautiful golden flute. And I remember that there was a severe thunderstorm on that day. Remember?
It was a couple of days ago. We have too many thunderstorms to remember them all. So I think skipping ahead a bit here, you met in Munich, you end up in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. And what were your first gigs here in D.C.? What brought you to the District of Columbia?
I probably would like to answer this question first, because I was in D.C. first. I came in the early 90s, in 91, to D.C., I was lucky enough to find the Levin School of Music, and particularly to find an amazing teacher there called Irena Orlov. And studying with her really changed my life, and after this I stayed and studied at Peabody Conservatory and kept in touch with Irena. After this I went to Munich to study with a wonderful pianist who was somebody that Irena knew, called Eli Sovier Saladze. That's how I met Vasily, and after we studied and met in Munich, we thought, you know, what place welcomes people from two different countries? And we came back to D.C. For me back, for him came to D.C. So this is how our history here started. So for me, discovering Irena Orlov and Levin School of Music really started my professional life as a musician. So my first gigs were really in D.C., and my first music competitions that I won were in D.C. So I really kind of knew that that's a city that welcomes music, and that's how I introduced it to Vasily. Now he can tell you more about his exciting life before that.
musical life before I arrived to Washington. Oh, I had very interesting musical life because when I was in St. Petersburg, I worked in two chamber orchestras. First, I started, actually, my first place of work as musician was, you wouldn't believe it, was the State Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, which is the Tsar's Palace.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Yeah, this is the famous museum with a lot of arts, with the collection of gold. And I remember after one recording, I was walking, recording ended well in after the midnight, and I was walking during the white night time over the bridge, and which was overlooking the Neva River, and was thinking that the Tsar was walking here probably too, and could also see this. It was absolutely fantastic time. It was the St. Petersburg Camerata Orchestra under Maestro Saulius Sandetskis. And then I worked in St. Petersburg Soloist Chamber Ensemble under Michael Gantwerk, who is a fantastic violinist and professor of St. Petersburg Conservatory. I studied in St. Petersburg Conservatory with Anatoly Nikitin, with Professor Anatoly Nikitin, who unfortunately passed away 2 years ago. And so I also worked in St. Petersburg Philharmonic Orchestra, which is a big Philharmonic Orchestra under Maestro Temirkanov. And with all these groups that I worked with, I traveled around the world. It was very, very interesting and really great time of my life, anywhere from Japan to Uruguay. So it was a lot of traveling. But then I settled in Munich, and in Munich I worked, and Rallis actually did too. We worked for the Villa Musica as a student, stipendiats they call the young performers over there. And then I worked for Yehudi Menuhin Live Music Now, and was contracted by a couple of orchestras in Germany too, and played with them. And since I'm here, practically my main duties here are teaching a little bit of conducting and a lot of performing what we do with Ralitza, and we do it mostly on our own.
Mm-hmm. And you're still associated with Levine. You both teach at Levine.
Yes,
and
both teach at Levine.
Are you responsible for ensembles, or you do primarily private lessons at Levine?
We do both.
Kind of
we do private
things.
Lessons, and we are associate chairs of chamber music department at Levin Music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, you also have welcomed Yuri and Vlad into your midst, into this professional music realm. So we are going to hear from you two. What are you going to play for us, Yuri? You want to tell us?
So we will play the Gavotte by Henry Purcell.
Excellent. This is the Gavotte by Henry Purcell for violin and cello. And the boys are setting up to play momentarily.
Thank you.
Bravo. So, Vlad and Yuri, let's talk to you for a moment as they set down the cello and the violin back into their cases. Vlad, how old are you? And did you start with the cello?
I'm 9 years old, and I started the...
Hold on, let's repeat that and get a little bit closer to the microphone.
I am 9 years old, and I started playing the cello when
closer,
I was...
Closer, get even closer, like a rock singer. Yeah, there you go.
I started playing the cello... I'm 9 years old, and I started playing the cello when I was 5, and that was the first instrument I started playing, I think. And then later on, maybe like 1 year later, I started playing the piano. And
you're still learning how to play the piano?
Yeah, I learn with my dad's mom.
Okay. Grandma. She sounds like a pretty good teacher. She's got a background for it anyway. And is this the cello that you have here in the studio? Is that the first cello that you started on?
No, this is the third cello. I started on like a very small cello.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got a bigger cello, and this is the one, my third one.
The third one?
So I play newer pieces like every year.
Yeah. And when are you going to graduate to the next size up? When will you need a new cello again?
Maybe in fourth grade.
In fourth grade?
Yeah, now I'm in third.
Okay.
So maybe in fourth grade one day.
And Yuri, how old are you?
So I'm 12 years old.
Okay.
My first instrument was the violin, and I stick with that. And I also I also play the piano as well with like Vaughn, and I practice with the same teacher as my grandmother.
Can you tell a difference to, does playing the piano affect your playing of the violin? Can you see the work there as benefiting the other?
I think the piano kind of gives you more of a skill with your fingers, and it's kind of the same thing with in the violin also. It's a lot of, both of them are associated a lot with your hands and your finger motions and different things like that.
And you must practice a fair amount.
Yeah.
Vlad, how often do you practice?
I try to practice every day. That's why I go to sleep pretty late on school days. So my dad usually tries to make me practice at least one hour a day.
Yeah. So. And Yuri, same?
Yeah, so I practice every single day, and you at least an hour, and usually hour and a half or more, but at least an hour every day, yeah.
Is that just of the violin, or do you split it up between piano and violin?
Just of the violin,
violin. So are there days when you feel like just not practicing, and do you have any advice for people who are feeling kind of lazy and just don't really feel like practicing that day but know they should anyway?
Well, usually when I don't feel like practicing on a day, I try to get calmer, and then like maybe read a book or something, and then it makes me feel more like doing something like practicing. And I usually ask my dad too with me, because I'm not that good at practicing by myself, I like practicing with my dad instead.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of discipline. What kind of book do you read to kind of set yourself up into that mental state?
I read like Who Was and like What Is series a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I like reading chapter books with some illustrations.
Okay. Yuri, what are your techniques to get yourself to practice?
Well, I believe it's different for lots of people, because there are many different ways. But for me, a lot of times I do listen to recordings of the pieces that I play, or different pieces of like professionals playing them. And I see the outcome that you can get from if you practice that piece. I see the outcome you can get. And also just seeing how hard the composer worked on creating the piece, and just how much work they put in. So I try to equalize the amount of work, and I just get encouraged to be as good and play as well. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being with us and for playing the Purcell. Do you play together often?
No. This is like the first piece we've played. I think just us two.
Yeah, I've played with my dad and my mom, but never with him. So, yeah, it's kind of our first time. It's a new experience and a fun one. Yeah.
Well, we're going to shift back to the Chamber Music at Noon series. Let's talk a little bit more about it, because I obviously have a personal investment in this program. I don't think we
can do it. Without you, this series would not be possible. I'm absolutely sure. Everything starting from arranging the schedule and ending up...
Well, now, the schedule was arranged 17 years ago, the first Thursday of every month.
But keeping the arrangement.
I had nothing
keeping
to do with
the arrangement and the ending up beautiful banner that you created and you bringing it in front of the library, so that the people would know about our series. So thanks to you for doing this.
And the little touches of having a bottle of water when you've just walked in after the metro. Mm-hmm. you don't forget anything.
Yes, water for performers is critical.
Is a must. You're a performer yourself, so you know that. But yeah. you're a wonderful series manager.
So we will open the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library in 2020. We are hearing fall of 2020, and construction is on schedule. We will have an auditorium.
Oh, wow. That will be great.
What do you hope for in the new auditorium?
I think that since our new auditorium will be much bigger in size, much larger than the one that we have, I'm pretty sure that we need to... put more into advertisement of our concert series, and we were talking with you, more thematic concerts would be one of the part of this thing. So if we create and advertise ahead of time the themes that we're going to dedicate the concerts to, and probably even collaborating with the library administration, supporting the teams that library announces. So that would be one of the things. And hopefully some technological advantage. We will use the technological things that the library will be providing, and maybe even podcast or broadcast some of the concerts. That
live
would be
broadcast
really great.
From the auditorium.
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah. Live broadcast from the auditorium would be really, really great thing to do.
And we are hoping the piano that is at the Goethe Institute may be right back at the MLK Junior Memorial Library. Mm-hmm. We may find ways to purchase a new baby grand piano for that space. That remains to be seen.
Wow, if you have two pianos.
If two
opens,
pianos,
that
changes
a
lot. Because it's two pianos, especially in the library environment, we can do the symphonies. And you probably know that Ralitza has a project which is called A Room with a Symphony. And she learns the symphonies. She did some Brahms, she did some Schubert, Mozart, and she played these symphonies in her recitals and in our recitals as a solo pianist. But with two pianos, it would be also very interesting really, really great.
I mean, as I said again, you know, the idea of the puzzle and filling in the blanks in the puzzle, you know, DC is obviously a city with lots of music. And you know, we can all easily go to the symphony hall and hear a symphony, and we can all, you know, there is just so much that sometimes one can't even choose. But I find the combination of a learning environment and performance to be very formative for both audience and performers. So my idea with A Room with a Symphony, which is obviously modeled after A Room with a View, you know, it's kind of using that title because I like that novel. Was really to introduce people to a symphony almost in the way that when a lot of symphonies were composed, you know, the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, it wasn't as easy to just go and hear anything you want. And so one of the ways to hear it was to hear it in a piano arrangement. And I think hearing it this way, although definitely cannot compete with hearing it played by a beautiful symphony orchestra, gives you an insight in the music that having had that insight, when you go to the concert hall, you listen with a different perspective. And I think that's an ideal situation.
Kind of like reading a Shakespeare play and studying it before you go the performance.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what about the acoustics of the space? You have been adamant to do the chamber music at Noon series in A5 in the past, specifically because of the acoustics. I remember asking if you wanted to do a performance in the Great Hall, where there also is a piano, and you said no because of the acoustics.
It is very interesting. A5, although it looked like a very usual big large room in the basement, it has a very nice acoustics over there. So I remember that singers told me that they loved to sing over there. As an instrumentalist, I also loved very much to perform there, because it was just enough reverberation and just enough dry. So it was basically perfect room for music.
And I think, you know, the other issue is that we don't play a lot of amplified music. You know, I think when Vasily plays with Eric Ulreich, when Eric plays his electric guitar, Vasily plays electric cello. Now, that's an amplified instrument. But most of the time, we use acoustic instruments. And, you know, having a room where people, it's not like people are not supposed to make any noise, but when people can stay calmly and listen as opposed to, you know, moving around and you know, having people enter and exit, I think for acoustical music that's a bit better as an environment, because it helps both the listeners and the performers to get the best out of the experience. So I think that's part of it, that, you know, if you have an auditorium that's for the purpose of being an auditorium, I think it helps the audience.
And A5 had a brick walls, carpet, and some sound paneling, which sounds very basic, but it worked perfectly to create this dry resonant space. What, you know, in this new auditorium, I'm imagining there will be a lot of wood. What other additions will we need to make? Do you have suggestions for us?
Well, it's necessary to look at it. We Ralitza and I were first artists who performed in the big Strutmer Hall. Even when they have not completed all the lighting for the concert hall, because they had the representatives from the local and I believe from the newspapers and magazines in the United States that came, and they were demonstrating the acoustics in the Strutmer Hall, and apparently they have these panels that they can move around and adjust the acoustic based to the acoustics in the hall based on who is the performer in the concert hall, whether it's a symphony orchestra or a chamber music or a soloist. And obviously that would be great thing, although I have not seen the I did not see the concert hall yet, and I hope that I'm sure that the library will hire the specialists who will make sure that this concert hall will have a proper good
was it going to
setup.
Be an amphitheatrical space? I remember seeing it like this.
So. Yeah, it's like stadium seating sort of.
Hopefully it won't be too dry, but you know, I don't think it's in danger of being the other way, because, you know, we are in a century where things get padded usually.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully it will be done in just as good a balance as we had in A5, because then certainly the singers will be happy.
Indeed. Got to keep the singers happy.
Yes.
All right. So we are going to leave you today, this afternoon, our listeners, with another musical selection. Before that, I would like to plug once again the next Chamber Music at Noon concert will be on Thursday, June 6th with cellist Wade Davis. Join us. That's 12 o'clock at 1990 K Street Northwest at the Goethe Institute, Washington. This has been an episode of DC Public Library Presents on Full Service Radio, broadcast live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Thank you, Yuri, Vlad, Vasily, and Ralitza for being today's guests and sharing with us your great talent and expertise. Visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library's services and programs. Talk to us online at DCPL on Twitter and at DC Public Library on Instagram. Listen and download this show wherever you listen to your podcasts by searching for Full Service Radio. On next week's episode, your hosts Portia and Will will bring you into the library verse right here on Full Service Radio. So with that, we will leave you with the London Trio by Haydn, performed by Yuri, Vlad, and Vasily.